Hi, everybody. It is Lee Milty, your coach, and I have a fantastic, fantastic interview for you today. It's someone, one of my favorite people of all time. It's Kevin Eckenberry, and Kevin and I have known each other for a long time. He has worked with me. I have hired him to speak in front of some of my groups, and if you don't know him, he is an exceptional, remarkable person who teaches a great deal about leadership. And for all of us as entrepreneurs and business owners, one of the things that I think often that we don't put as much effort as we should, because it really determines our success, is our leadership. But I'm going to tell you all about Kevin, and I want you to know that he is truly a recognized world leader on leadership development. And he is the chief, and I love this, Kevin, potential officer. I've never heard anybody call themselves that before, but that is fantastic. And Inc. .com named him one of the top 100 leadership and management thinkers in the world. So he's worked with Fortune 500 companies, small firms, universities, government agencies, hospitals, and more. And his client list is remarkable. It's the American Red Cross, A&W Canada, Chevron, Phillips Chemical Company, John Deere, and as a farmer's daughter, I'm very familiar with John Deere. Purdue, is that how you say that, Kevin?
Purdue University.
Thank you, University. Sears Canada, Southwest Airlines, U.S. Marine Corps, U.S. Mint, Verizon, and many more. He has been in business with his own group since 1993. He has 10 very talented professionals and a lot of coaches and trainers that collaborate with him. And he's the author of many best-selling books, Remarkable Leadership, which is fantastic. I recommend it. Vantage Points on Learning and Life. I think the last interview I had with Kevin was from Bud to Boss, Secrets of the Successful Transition to Remarkable Leadership, and he co-authored that with Guy Harris. And the truth is, he's a contributing author to over 20 other books, and he wrote the unique book Leadership. It's actually a collection of short leadership ideas, Leadership Tweet. And it's published on Twitter. His blog is amazing. If you get a chance to go see it, it's collectively read literally by thousands of people around the world. So welcome, Kevin.
Thanks, Lee. I'm glad you read that introduction that my mother wrote. That's good.
Actually, what I did was I went to your website, and because I've known you
I have a whole file
on you. And by the way, Kevin is a contributor to the My Millionaire Smarts coaching, and he's always on the membership site, and his stuff is always fantastic. And Kevin, you know, it's that time of year where people have their thoughts in a million different places, but I really do want to talk about the importance of not only self-leadership but entrepreneurial leadership. But I want you to do justice to yourself and our audience today. Tell us about your background as a leader and an entrepreneur.
Well, I mean, obviously you said a lot of really nice things there, but I think that in terms of, you know, I guess the most important thing, Lee, is that, you know, I'm a member of this audience, right? Everyone who's listening, you know, I'm right there with you. So my business may be different than your business, but I've been in business for 21 years and in the process right now of starting a couple of other things, and my business has grown significantly in the past several years. But after 21 years of doing this, I guess the most important thing to say in the relationship lead to this conversation is that, you know, I am a part of this audience, and so this stuff that we're going to talk about today is stuff that I work on and struggle with and am challenged by every day. And just because this is what I teach and this is, you know, the products and services for leaders is the nature of our business, doesn't mean that I have all the answers. I've just got a lot of time thinking about the answers and, most importantly, trying stuff. So we're not going to come at this today from, you know, here's 44,000 people in a study or any of those sorts of things. This is real life that I'm using every day, that I'm trying to get better at, just like I'm hoping all of you are as well.
You know, that is so true, Kevin. Every day I think to myself, how can I polish my diamond a little bit better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's
exactly
and that's
right.
exactly what we're all doing. And the other leadership thing we didn't mention, but I think is very important, is that we're all role models to other people. Most everybody has kids of some sort. Sometimes our staff are our kids. Sometimes we have real kids. But, you know, who we are and how we present ourselves to the world really makes an impression on people. So it's not what we say often. It's who we really are. So I think it's very good for us to have that kind of wake-up call of what is the message I send to the world as a leader. Okay,
so two things about that, Lee, before we go on. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but two things about that. Number one is most of the people listening are probably parents, right? And Lee, I know you've met my son, and you said some really nice things about me when you met him. But the thing is that, you know, the stuff we're going to talk about, a lot of stuff about being a more effective leader, it applies. It's not just at work. It's not just with your team, but as a parent, it absolutely applies. I think that's really very, very true and appropriate to consider. And the last thing is, you know, I had my entire team, Lee, here in Indianapolis the end of last week, doing some planning, and I think I got paid the best compliment I could possibly be paid as a leader when people on the team said, you know, we work for someone who actually lives what he's teaching. And I don't know that I could get as a professional, certainly not as a leader, that you could get a better compliment than that, because to your point about people are watching us, and as business owners and as entrepreneurs, if we want to be creating the kind of team that is allows us to not have to be there every minute, that allows us to grow our businesses the way we want to grow, we have to know that they're watching. And you know, maybe the biggest advice I could give you is if you're not getting the results from your team that you want, you might start by looking in the mirror.
Yes, everything flows downhill. I just came back from doing a big coaching meeting, and there were some, I'm just going to be nice and call it mischief
yeah.
at the meeting.
Okay.
And we'll all laugh at that very nice term I'm using.
Yeah.
Because they're all entrepreneurs, and so occasionally they test the leader. They really do see how far they can push you.
Mm-hmm.
And to see what your reaction will be sometimes, you know, are you going to call them down? Are you going to bring it to their attention? Are you going to speak the truth? And it's great that your leaders compliment you on walking your talk, because you really do that. But I do actually know, as growing up, my father was a rancher, and we had lots and lots of people work for us. And so my father always said that, to me personally, he said, you have to work harder than them. You have to be more aware and see the big picture. And he said, they're only going to follow your lead. So everything that you do between your attitude and your own work ethic and, you know, the quality of what you do will be duplicated by them. And I will say that because my father was a really big reader, I can contribute that skill within myself today. I'm a huge reader because he read all the time, so I saw that. And we automatically, all of us, take our cues from people we admire. So I do admire you very much, Kevin, because you have made a real dent in the world, and I hear people talk about you all the time. So what is the difference between managing and really being a leader? There's a difference between being a manager and a leader.
There's a big difference, and I think the first thing I'll say is that a lot of people don't think about it being a difference, because as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, you need to wear both of those hats. They're just not the same hat. If I were to ask you to describe to me, I do this in workshops all the time, Lee. I ask people, come up, give me 6 words to define leadership, and people will do that. I'll talk about that in a second. But when I get to this point and say being a leader is not the same as being a manager, and people look at me sort of funny, I say, listen, if I had you give me your 6 words for manager, would they have been the same words? They're like, no, it's not the same thing. You know, we manage things, we manage budgets, we manage forecasts, we manage things, and we lead people. And so I like to think of the two circles, the circle that defines management and the circle that defines leadership, as overlapping circles. Lee, it's sort of like the MasterCard logo, where they're overlapping, they're connected, they're just not one and the same. And so there are some skills that help us in both. And what I think I find this in in working with leaders in big companies and in small businesses that we tend, as a general statement, we tend toward the managing side rather than the leadership side because it's a little clearer, it's a little more black and white, it's where the urgent is more likely at. I mean, thinking about the sales numbers this month is something like I'm kind of not going to not think about that, right? Like, it's right there in front of me, and yet that was really bad English, I know. So here's the thing. But what about those people that are working for you, that are doing important work, or whatever that work is that they're doing? Obviously, you've put them there on purpose, and so are you supporting them, encouraging them, leading them, helping them move in the direction of their of becoming more effective? Are you coaching them? And so if we're not, many of those things don't show up as the urgent on a Monday morning or a Friday afternoon, but they're the things that really have the biggest leverage for moving our business forward. And I think if you look at people that make the transition from just purely entrepreneur that run and lead a business that continues to grow long term, either they figure out how to lead or they put people in place that are doing it. Because, you know, some of us as entrepreneurs, we want to be the creators, and that's what we are, and that's awesome. And at some point, if you're growing your business, you better put somebody in to lead the folks, or you're going to run them ragged or run them away. And so it's just so very important. And so if you ask me then, okay, if we manage things but lead people, then what does that look like? Well, back to that exercise that I do, and Lee, I've done it with people all over the world. Give me 6 words to define leadership, and we'll put it up on a wall. And in the end, it comes down to two important truths that leadership is in the end, that leadership is about the place that we're heading, the goal, the mission, the whatever word you want to use, the objective. And so leadership is about moving people in the direction of that desired future state. And leading them means that, by the way, leadership means people are choosing to follow. If you think you're leading, Lee, but no one's following you, you're just taking a walk. And so leadership is all about if people are they're choosing or not. I'm sorry?
I said I've had those days.
Well, there you go. Well, yeah, well, we probably all have had them. But if you're having them, so everybody, if you're having them every day, look in the mirror. So leadership is, it's not about us, it's about the goal, right? And it's also not about us, it's about the team. So, yes, we know where the goal is, and in the end, the thing that we can't make people follow us. You can't make really anybody do anything for very long without there being unintended consequences. We want to get them to make choices, right? We want people to choose to see the goal that we see and want to move to it for their reasons. And if we can do that, we're heading in the right direction. And neither of those things are about managing. Both of those things are about people, and it's complex and it's difficult. But that's the mantle we pick up if we're going to be a leader.
Well, one of the things that I try to talk to my staff a lot about is thinking for me. In other words, that they're not just doing activities, that they're actually participating in thinking about, you know, is everything rolling in the right direction? That, you know, it's not just about obtaining things. It's about, you know, what would Lee do here, or what would Kevin do here? Or I'm always trying to get my staff to think as they own the business, so that they are actually, it's kind of co-leading in the sense that I'm depending on them to see things that I can't see sometimes. So I'm always just trying to get my staff, as we all are, to think like we do, the entrepreneur. So what are some of your tips for that?
Well, so first of all, I mean, it reminds me of a great story. I don't know if it's a true story, but it's a good story, so I'll tell it anyway. So after about the time that so it's an old story, so no one can know for sure probably at this point, but about the time that the Transcontinental Railroad was finished, so in the 1860s, the president of the Union Pacific Railroad is going across going across the country, and they're out in the middle of nowhere, and all of a sudden the train passes a group of workers, and the president of the Union Pacific says, stop the train, stop the train. They back up, And he gets off the train to this group of workers, and he says hello to this guy, and he embraces this guy, and they start to talk, and they ask about each other's families. And then, you know, they visit for a few minutes, and then the president of the Union Pacific Railroad gets back on the train, and they take off. And all of the guys working with the guy that he was talking to is like, so how do you know the president of the Union Pacific? He says, how can that be? He's on the train, and you're out here, you know, working on the rail. And this is, how did that happen? He says, well, we went to work on the same day. We both went to work for the Union Pacific on the same day. And the guy says, well, how is it that they're, his friends will say, well, how is it you're here and he's there? He says, well, I went to work for a paycheck and he went to work for the railroad.
Ooh, good story.
So
yes.
The point, I mean, it's to your point exactly, right? I don't know if you want to call it co-leading. I think what you're doing is really leading, and you're creating people that are, that, you know, the only way you're really going to get to what you're describing in the end is if they understand what the railroad's doing and not just work until Friday and a paycheck, right? So when your language of getting them to think like you is all about them seeing your picture, right? You want them
right.
to know, and now I'm going to use you, but it's really all of us. Our team needs to know who our customers are, what they look like, what they don't like. You know, some marketing people would talk about building your customer avatar. But like, anytime I can get my people in front of customers, and in our business that's sometimes challenging, I want them to know what that looks like, what that feels like, who they are. I want them to know people's names. I want them to understand why it is that we're doing the things we're doing. I just mentioned that I had my whole team together from around the country last week, and you know, a big part of that was just to get everyone on board with the same picture. And quite honestly, I learned earlier this fall, Lee, that some of my team didn't really know they certainly knew what we do and at some level why we do it, but they didn't all know my story. And so at the start of our meeting, I took about 30 minutes just to give sort of my backstory to help give them a deeper understanding of why we're in this business, why we do matters, you know, and if your team really understands what makes your business different, but even deeper than that, why is this what we do, right? Why does it matter? How does it help customers? How does it change the world? And if you can get people there, then that's two-thirds of the battle. I mean, there are lots of people, Lee, that do what I do, that have gotten on the bandwagon in the last several years about employee engagement. And that gets talked about even more in bigger organizations than it does in organizations our sizes. But so the holy grail is employee engagement. All it is exactly what you already said, Lee, which is getting people to think like an owner. They may not want to own it. They might not want to make a payroll. That's okay. But if they see where we're going and why we're trying to do that, and why it makes a difference for customers, that's a long way down that path.
Absolutely. It is. When I hire people, I literally say to them, you know, here's all the things about the position. But at the very, very end, Kevin, I always say, so here's really the bottom line. Your job in life is to make my life easier. And I cannot tell you the number of surprise looks I've gotten, because they say, some people don't quite understand that really is the job, that we have a vision, you know, the owner, everybody, meaning mm-hmm. we, and
right, yep.
that we're trying to birth that vision into reality and maintain it. And so that I want my staff to think that, you know, whatever it is I'm doing, so like I've really trained my staff fabulous, and they're very, very good at it, like on travel folders. So I get mm-hmm. them to think every single thing that could possibly go wrong is a backup on that travel folder, like the name of the airline, the hotels and emergency numbers, and you know, what's my plan B if plan A goes to heck?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a real easy thing. But for everybody listening today, you've really got to be thinking about how can you help your staff think like you, understand and see your vision. So what would be, in your opinion, Kevin, ways to do that? Do you believe in office meetings, one-on-one? How do you like to engage with people the most?
Yes and yes, but I'll talk about both of those in a second. But I'm going to go back to what you said before. You know, how do I help them see what I see? And half of the answer is in the way you framed the question, because this is about helping them see it, which means you can't just tell it to them, send them a memo, right, and have them get it. It comes from conversation. It comes from time. Right, and I know that sometimes we don't feel like we have that time, but that's in many cases what it takes. If people don't feel that they, it's one thing to say something; it's another thing for people to get it. Right, message sent is not the same as message received, and so I think that even in the way you framed the first part of the question, Lee, is very important and an important part of it. In terms of tactics, I am a believer in people gathering. I'm a believer in it when it's with a clear purpose and focused. I'm not a believer in it being long and drawn out. But I am very much a believer in having meetings and having an agenda that clearly describes what the outcome is. And if we've got a 30-minute meeting and we reach the outcome in 18 minutes, then the meeting's over. We're done. The whole thing is about getting to the outcome. The whole thing is not about spending the time that's on people's calendar. I'll give you a very specific time tactic that we use on my team that works extremely well. We only, Lee, have one standing meeting. It's every Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern time, and whoever's around is on it. And if I'm not, then someone else leads it. But here's the two things about that meeting. Number one is, the meeting is designed to be, the length of the meeting is 4 minutes times the number of people in attendance. So if everybody's there and there's 10, it would be a 40-minute meeting. Everybody's calendar is scheduled for 60 minutes, though. And so what I know is that the meeting is always over before people's time calendar is up, but almost always in that meeting, Lee, there will be something that comes up that two people need to talk about or three people need to talk about. Now, in my case, part of my team is remote, so this meeting is taking place over a phone line and or some other technology, depending on the time. And so a lot of times in meetings what happens is two or three people end up solving something and everyone else is watching them. We don't do that. We do what we're going to do, and then when the 32 minutes is up, if it's eight people, then people have either the opportunity to work on issues with other people that were on the call because they know their calendar's free right now, or to work on an issue that comes up during the meeting, or to get some time back in their calendar. And we've been doing that for a long time. It's extremely valuable. And I would say that 2/3 of people end up having something else productive that they're doing with one or other members up until the top of the next hour. But about 1/3 of them probably go right back to their regular stuff, and their meeting isn't 60 minutes, it's however long it ended up being, 4 times the number of people. And it's been an exceptionally valuable tool for us. The other thing you said, Lee, was around face-to-face meetings, and I think you have to have FaceTime with your folks, depending on how big your team is, what that looks like exactly. People have to have an opportunity to interact with you, there's a lot of things we can do to structure that so that they're not wasting our time, but people need to be connected to us, especially if we really want them to see that picture. If we really want them to begin to think like us, it's not going to happen unless there's interaction. And I think the other thing that has to happen in those meetings, Lee, or whatever you want to call them, is that we got to quit talking. Sometimes as entrepreneurs, we are so excited about our stuff, so focused on our plans, so excited about the new product or whatever it might be, that we end up, and by the nature of our personalities, we end up overwhelming people. And what we often need to do is talk less, shut up, ask some questions, find out what's going on with them, find out what their challenges are in the work. And although, to your point, we want them to make our lives easier, and there are times when we have to find out how to help improve processes for them so that they can get the work done more effectively.
Exactly. One of the things I always like to ask my staff is, what can I do for you? And is there anything I can help you with? Is there, you know, anything that has happened you don't quite understand? I have found that often, unless you ask people, they won't tell you that.
that's a life, that's a life in general thing, but when you are the person called BOSS and also happen to be the person who is writing the paycheck, you know, listen, people have, I mean, even if you've got great relationships with your folks, and even if there's a lot of trust and all those things, you're still the boss, right? And even if their experience with you is positive and all those things, people have been worked other places, right? And they've had other people called boss, or they've sat at home around the dinner table and listened to mom and dad talk about management and the boss, right? And so, and you watch television and you get all that stuff. So there's all this baggage that people have in their head. Even, and I think you're exactly right, Lee, even if, you know, that you have high levels of trust and people have been around a long time, and there's still times when they're going to be hesitant, when they're not going to want to share. And so we've got to continue to break down those barriers. And we got to make sure that if they say something to us and we roll our eyes, like, how many times do I have to tell you kind of thing? We got to remember that we just shut off the faucet for the next time unless we realize it and immediately apologize. Like, you know what? That wasn't appropriate. I want to know. You need to tell me. I apologize. I'm human. You know, I've got to open that line of communication. I've got to keep opening that line of communication. And I think your question of how can I help you, what am I doing that's causing you a problem, what barriers can we get rid of are important questions. And any time I do coaching with my team that includes me sharing some feedback with them, I always have asked that question. Okay, so I've given you some thoughts and some advice, and we've talked about your stuff. Now you tell me, what can I do for you? Because as the leader, as the manager, as the owner, you know, in many ways we're serving them. So as well. So we got to make sure that we're not blind to what things can be fixed. And I can tell you, again, just having had my team all together, the number of new ideas of things that we could easily fix or change that come up is phenomenal, right? I can get excited about the just the little stuff irritating them that we can fix, I never even thought about, didn't even know about, and now, you know, we can go out and implement them, get those fixed, and really improve our productivity, reduce frustration, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that is also true. You know, one of the things I really admire about you, Kevin, is that you work with not only new leaders, but, you know, leaders throughout their whole process. But what are some of the biggest challenge for people who are new leaders?
Well, you know, I thought about that in preparation for our call, Lee, and, you know, I'm guessing that there are some people that are listening or reading this transcript that, you know, have had their business for a long time, grew up with the people that work for them, and you know, there's probably some of you that have a challenge of how do I, these people that work for me are also my friends, and how do I deal with that? So I think there's a challenge, but I think the one I want to start with first, and if you want to come back to that when we can, Lee, but what I want to talk about first is if you're growing your business and you were the solopreneur or you had two or three people for a long time, and now as the business is growing, you really have to stop and actually think about this role of being a leader. I mean, I think that in itself is such a big transition. When we have these conversations with our corporate clients, Lee, it's about the person that gets promoted to being a supervisor, right? But many of us have promoted ourselves because we've grown our business, right? And so now we've got 2, 3, 4, or 5 people, and suddenly, and maybe it was one thing when you had one or two, or you had an assistant, but now you've got a staff of people, and you got people out running around in trucks, and you got people doing whatever. Like, at some point, you have to actually realize that this leadership role is something that you've got to do. And if you're struggling with turnover, if you're struggling with attracting the right kind of people, if you're struggling with customer service issues, if you're struggling with some of these things, it is very likely that part of it is you've not really made this mental shift from running my business to leading an organization. And I think one of the challenges is people don't recognize that, Lee. And the other challenge is they may recognize it, but don't like it. Right? Like, that's not really what I wanted to do. Well, sorry. If you really want that your business to grow in those sorts of ways, then you're going to have to pick that up, or you're going to have to figure out who is going to be around to help do it for you. Because you have to be doing it, or you can't be successful in keeping a team, in having high productivity, and having high quality, and all of whatever those metrics would be in your organization.
One of the things that I'm fascinated about with entrepreneurs is they hire people and then give them sort of immediate training and then just cut them loose with the expectation that, you know, everything will run well. And I, you know, what you don't inspect, don't expect for the most part.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And so what do you tell? So that's a real typical entrepreneur. Wouldn't you say they hire someone, they put them in a slot, and then they think it's going to run on automatic?
Well, they spend a couple hours with them, wave their arms, and say, go get it. Go get them, Tiger. And, like, Tiger's not ready. You know, I think that that's – there's no way that people can – no way can people can even get the task figured out in a couple hours or in a day, let alone start to think like us, right? Back to our earlier conversation. It's going we all know you hire somebody, there's a lot of costs involved, and you got to hire them, you got to all that stuff. But I think once you've taken the effort to pick the person and select them to join your team, you have made an investment, and you've got to work with that investment, right? And so to bring someone in and throw them to the wolves, now that I changed my metaphor, but if I bring someone in and do that, I'm not treating that. I'm treating that like an maybe at best I'm treating that like an expense. You've got to treat it like an asset. You got to treat it like an investment. And listen, I didn't hire this person to have them here for 6 weeks. I hired this person to be here for 6 years, and you know, and to grow and to be more successful. And so if you're going to go buy office paper, that's one thing. If you're going to go buy a new car, it's a whole different thing. One is an investment. You're going to spend some time thinking about that investment. You're going to spend some time maintaining that investment and investing in it. And I think that if we as entrepreneurs and as business owners can just make that shift, I brought this person in, I'm investing in them, I'm not just hiring them. We know how to deal with investments. And if you just keep that as your mindset, you'll probably do much better. If your organization is of any size, you are also likely not the only person that ought to be doing training. You probably, until your organization is quite large, I would say you need to have some involvement in that, in terms of talking about expectations and culture and ownership and the kinds of things that we talked about earlier, Lee. And you are likely not the only person, or maybe in some cases the best person, to do all of their training. Who else is on your team? Who else did you include in the hiring decision, or at least in the interviewing process, right, that you would then want to be a part of bringing them up to speed about the business, bringing them up to speed about the task? Who is going to be their sort of person that they can mentor from or look to say, hey, Lee's not around, or I don't know if I should ask Lee this, so how do I do this or whatever? You know, that's what we need to do. We have to recognize that not everyone we hire has the same mindset as us, and so it's important for us to recognize. And by the way, we probably don't want a whole team of us's, right? And so we want the strengths that those folks bring. And so we can't expect them to communicate exactly like us, or maybe even be as proactive as us. And in fact, we might not want them to be bull in the china shop like us. We might want them to actually learn how to do something and keep doing it consistently and predictably, as opposed to trying whatever we think looks fun right now.
Yes, and most entrepreneurs are really not very good trainers because they're very big vision and they don't have a lot of patience. Mm-hmm. For going into the small details that many, many jobs want. So I do recommend that everybody get training courses and invest in their employees so that they really are trained well. But you've mentioned something I did want to ask you about. Hiring, for the most part, is very hard for most of us.
Mm-hmm.
I have learned that I'm not a I am not necessarily a great hire person because I see potential. That doesn't mean that it's going to last. So I have other things set in place to help me hire people. So what are some of your thoughts about hiring good people?
Well, I hired I've hired three people in the last 8 months, and they're home runs. So I must be doing something right. So
yes.
I've been thinking about, and I don't know that that's always been the case, although I've had pretty good success. I think that the things that I was really thinking about as I made these three hires, I guess I'll share three things. Number one is I got really clear about the not just the skill set, but the personality that would best serve both the job and the rest of the team. And when I wrote the job description or the announcements that we were looking for to hire people, I wrote them in words that would be attractive to that personality style. So I was very intentional on the front end of what I was attracting to hopefully get me a better match. And I think that that helped. So that was the first thing. That's before we even talked to anybody. The second thing is that I always try to be very clear about what the job is, what the job isn't. And it reminds me of something you said earlier, Lee, about when you bring people in. What I always, you said you tell people in the interview, you're here to make my life easier. I tell people in the interview, listen, this is a small organization. This is what it says, but other duties as required is like real. I'm not joking if I say that. Like, I may ask you to do anything, and it is what it is, right? Because that's what we're all here for, is to get the work done, and that work might look very different one day to the next. So I also want to get people that I think from the beginning are sort of, you know, one of the things that you and I share in commonly is farm background, right? So we're willing to roll your sleeves and do whatever has to be done. And if that means we're all going to do this thing, then that's what we're going to do. I wanted people to recognize that. And then the third thing is that part of my hiring process was for people to talk with several people. I wanted them to somewhat interview with other people, but I also gave the instruction to those people that, you know, got that far to say, when you're talking to Lisa or when you're talking to Angie or when you're talking to Guy, don't just learn. One of your jobs as a candidate is to find out for them what working for me is like. So, because I may not be who you want to work with. So I'm trying to do everything I can to get them to have a pretty clear picture of what it's like to work here, what it's like in our culture, and what it's like to work with me. So part of it, I guess what I'm saying is I want them to come with their eyes really wide open, because people come into that setting wanting a job, right? So they're sort of mostly in a yes sir, yes ma'am mode, right? And I want them to be making a conscious choice just like I'm making a conscious choice.
You know, that's a very good point. When I interview people, I always tell them, I said, you know, please don't think that this is, you know, we have a publishing company and I'm a speaker and I'm an author and I do a lot of, you know, traveling, but don't think that this is a glamorous job. It's work just like everything else. And you're laughing, I know. Because to the outside world, you know, it might look glamorous, but I've been around for a long time. I've done a lot of television, radio, and I've never been anywhere that it was really glamorous to work. Mm-hmm. Other people, like, it's sort of the naive thing to think that travel is glamorous.
Only until you do it.
We're laughing.
Only until you do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that you don't want them to think the job is glamorous, or even in both of our cases, because our work is similar in that way, that they think ours is somehow glamorous, right? So I think that the more transparent that we can be at the front end of the interviewing process, the hiring process, the better off we can be. I think that if there are – I used this word in passing a second ago, Lee, and maybe this comes because so much of the time we work in big organizations or much bigger organizations, but the word culture I think is really, really important. And culture is everywhere. So in your family, you have culture. I mean, there are things that you do on Thanksgiving Day that might be normal to not be normal to other people. That's your culture. It's like culture is how things are done around here, what it's like to be around here. And I think that you need to be, as a leader, I'll say two things. So first of all, I think that you need to hire for cultural fit. You need to hire for potential, to your point, Lee, but you need to hire for capability, for potential, but you also have to hire for organizational fit, cultural fit. And I think it's important. And so you need to know what your culture really is, not just the way people are around you, but the way they are, you know, the rest of the time. I always tell leaders – listen, there's a reason why there's a TV show called Undercover Boss, because a lot of times bosses, no one will tell the boss what's going on. They got to go out and, you know, fake mustache and go show up, right? So, or a wig or whatever. So the point here is that not just what you think the culture is, but what it really is, number one. And then the second thing is, if that culture isn't what you want it to be, now going beyond hiring, that's a big part of the leader's job, is to create what you want that to look like, right? Create what the work ethic is in your organization. Create what it is for us to have fun, or is it okay for us to have fun? And create the way that we interact with each other, and consciously create that. Because if you don't, it probably won't become what you want it to be.
Yes. So one of the questions I had for you is, how can you create greater engagement and ownership with your team? Because, again, to me, ownership, once someone has been really trained and they really own their job, that is what really makes my life easy, is that I know I can count on them, that they have looked deeper into it. They're not just, they're just not doing tasks. They're actually participating in it, so that I don't have to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and it's on my subconscious mind, oh, did that get taken care of?
Exactly. Well, and, you know, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but I think it's a really important thing. It is important for all of the reasons that you just described, but it's also important for the overall productivity of your organization, right? Of not only the work getting done that you've figured out, but the stuff that they are now figuring out to do that you never even thought of, right? The process improvements that they're making, in some cases, the new product opportunities that they might be identifying for you or whatever. And so I think that's what you want. And so is that level of ownership, that level of engagement. And I think beyond the several things that we've talked about already, Lee, the thing that I would add to this is that we have to keep sharing with them the big picture. And people need to know what's really going on. People need to know why stuff matters to you and what your long-term wish is, so that they have some sense of how they can help you create it, but also how they can be a part of it. And when we create that, we don't just create task completers, we create participants. You used that word a minute ago, this idea of really being a participant in. And the other thing that I would add, not just helping people see the big picture, but helping people see why. I know I mentioned it before, but perhaps the most important thing in the end is that people need to know why this matters. How does getting Lee's travel stuff all figured out correctly make a difference? Well, it makes a difference because it makes Lee's life easier, but it also allows Lee to be more focused on her audience when she arrives, and it allows Lee to make a bigger difference in the lives of that audience. It allows more of them to raise their hand and buy products so we can keep getting paid. I mean, there's 15 whys there, and it's not just about Lee wanting to have a good hotel room, right? And so,
yes.
Although she does, I understand that. I know you well enough to know that. But my point is that when we help people see the reason why, we don't have time for this whole story, but I'll tell you a short version of a story, Lee, real quick. And that is that about 15 years ago, I had my dad at the Indiana State Fair with me, and one of the things that happens at the Indiana State Fair is there's this antique tractor exhibit, and there's a parade every day at the fair that includes antique tractors, and I was there with my dad, and I knew the people that ran all that. I said, hey, can we find, if you got a couple people that have their tractors here, maybe we could be in the parade. And my dad and I go in this parade. My dad's driving a tractor, and I'm riding behind him, and again, a short version of the story, about 200 yards into the actual parade itself, I made the decision that I was going to own an antique tractor and have it at the Indiana State Fair. Now, at that point in time, it made no sense. I was about 36 years old. I lived in suburban Indianapolis, 3-car garage, 300 miles from the farm I grew up on. Well, how would I own it? How would I transport a tractor? Why would I buy a tractor and all that stuff? The whole point is, I don't own one, Lee. I own 10. And
of course you do.
But here's the thing. The point of the story is this. It's not really about tractors. At the time, it was about a deeper connection with my dad. It was a hobby that we shared until he unexpectedly passed away. It was a connection to my kidhood. It was a connection. It was connecting my children to that experience that they didn't have and I wouldn't be able to replicate for them in suburban Indianapolis. It was a connection to that state fair, which I really, really do care deeply about. I mean, it's in the end, it's not really about tractors. And so that's the point. It's not really about the travel folio, right? What's this really about? What's the, people will use word purpose or meaning, or people will use vision. All those are fine words. What's your why? If the why is big enough, people will, and people buy into the reason why, that's where ownership comes from. That's where engagement comes from. That's where participation comes from. They went to work for the railroad, not for a paycheck.
Right. Well, in my particular case, the travel folder is so important because we only have so much available energy every day, and if I have to waste my energy fighting the road warrior thing, by the time I get to the event, I'm spent. I'm exhausted. I've used all this available energy that I could have used to getting business. Mm-hmm. So, and my staff actually gets it because this is the one place in life that if it's not perfect, I will be very difficult. And they know that, so they work very hard to make that perfect. My travel folder is like an amazing thing when people see it because my staff does such great work on it. I know
Let me say one more thing about that though, Lee, because you know all of us as bosses are pretty good at that consequences thing. Like you don't get that right, you're going to hear about it, right?
Right.
But
yes,
when
yes,
they
yes.
understand the why in front of it, even if I do have to sort of give someone, you know, a talking to, if you want to use that language. Even if I have to do that, if people understand the why behind it, it's way easier for them to accept and understand.
Yes, yes.
Than if they don't have the other part. So I didn't want to leave without that, right? Because I think
I
too often that's where we just go, well, listen, you better get this right next time, darn it, or something like that. And so the point is that when people understand why you're doing it, you're not doing that because you're being a diva. You're not doing that because, listen, you know, I'm the king and you're all serving me. You're doing this because here's why that matters, right? Here's why that matters. Yep.
Yes, I appreciate you reminding us of that because when I was a kid, I was one of the why kids. You know, why do I have to do that? Why? But as soon as I knew why, I would do it. Maybe
no problem.
Not happily,
now I get, okay,
but I would do
now
it.
I understand. Right, now
exactly.
I understand.
So let's just talk about kind of for the next few minutes on how we as entrepreneurs can build our skills as leaders. I know we've talked about a number of things, but so let's just give our listeners today a few things that they can, you know, start right away as soon as they hear them.
Go ahead.
Which one do you want to start with?
Well, the first thing I would say is, you know, at some level we're preaching to the choir because people are in your program and they're listening, right? So, you know, the people that really need to hear this aren't listening, right? Because you've got loyal members that understand this, and at some level that's why they're here, so that's important. I think that my biggest thing here would be, well, let me say about three things. Number one is, we said earlier, asking your team what you can do to help them. And I think that part of our development comes from being aware of what our team needs. And so that's got to be a component of this, right? We can't try to, quote, build our leadership skills in a vacuum because the people that we're leading are, in many cases, the best place to judge how we're doing it. That's one thing. I think another thing is that too many people think that learning equals training, and that training means that I need to go to a course or buy a course or whatever and take that thing and then move on. But the problem with that is the training is an event, but learning is a process. And so and this is one of the reasons why I'm so honored, Lee, to be with you today, but also to have been a contributor to your Millionaire Smarts system for a long time, is that this whole idea of we really need to be learning on an ongoing basis. And that doesn't mean I need to be going to a workshop every 3 weeks because you're saying I don't have time for that. I know that, neither do I. But that doesn't mean that we can't be learning all of the time. Different people have different learning strategies. I mentioned earlier, Lee, that some people are going to listen to this and some people are going to read it. You know, it's great that you provide it that way because then people can take the strategy that works best for them. So I think you have to know yourself and figure out how you best learn, and then you need to think about how you integrate it as an ongoing part of your work. That if I want to be a successful leader, I have to be consciously and intentionally working on it. That does not mean I'm spending 2 hours a day reading about leadership. It means that every day, all the time, I'm thinking about the role model behavior. You know, am I role modeling what I want? Are we getting the results we want? If I'm finding that there's a skill that I'm missing, that I'm going to go out and I'm going to work on that consciously on that skill. Ben Franklin had these 13 virtues, and he says, I'm going to work on a virtue each week for 13 weeks, and I'm going to go back and do it again. At the end of the year, I've done 13 virtues four times. 13 times 4 is 52. And the approach that we take here on our team is one skill at a time, 1 month at a time. And we've got a number of products that help people do that. But it's the whole idea is that for a time period, for 30 days, I'm going to work on this one thing. Now, what that means is I'm already doing this one thing. Let's just say it was meetings. And let's say you had 3 or 4 meetings a month with your team. This month, I'm going to work on making my meetings more effective. So rather than just doing those on habit or just doing those out of routine, I'm going to consciously think about them. I'm going to maybe build a little better agenda or whatever I decide to do. And so for this month, what I'm really going to try to do is improve my habit around running meetings, and then I'm going to hopefully lock in those gains and go work on the next thing. And so some people say, hey, I'm going to take a year, I'm going to work on this, or I say, let's take it like an elephant. We can only eat one bite at a time. So let's make an ongoing approach to say, I'm going to get a little bit better at this and a little bit better at this and lock in my gains as I go. Now, again, preaching to the choir, because the people that are investing in your stuff, and not only investing in it but taking advantage of it, you guys already get it. So while Lee, I feel like I'm preaching to the choir, I'm also preaching to people that will actually go do something, which is awesome, right?
Yes.
So there's a couple of thoughts.
Well, one of the things that I like to do and I try to tell people to do is, you know, is to make sure your existing staff occasionally is truly documenting what they're doing and mm-hmm. having a very up-to-date office manual. Carly has been with me for many, many years, 7 now, and a number of years ago she got into a car accident and she was out for almost 3 months. And if we had not had her document, you know, everything, you know, mm-hmm. what she does, how she does it, who her contacts are, what her schedule are, what the to-do list is, you know, I would have been lost because, as you know, I don't do that stuff. So I just recommend everybody who's listening to this today, you know, you never know when something, you know, bad can happen, and that very, very important person of yours is not there. And don't rely on yourself, and don't rely that someone else can figure it out. Really do have it all documented. And one of the things that has made my office run very much like a well-oiled machine for the most part is that we have these checklists. And mm-hmm. because, you know, like everybody's business is very complicated. Have we checklist? Do we have this? Do we have that? Do we have the other? And life is very busy, so sometimes we'll forget if we don't do the check off at, you know, with the list every day. So I highly recommend that you know, when you have your meetings, folks, that you start asking people to, you know, create checklists and manuals and things like that. And also, so when you want to promote that person, Carly, by the way, has gotten married and mm-hmm. she's been promoted out of my assistants into, because I want to keep her. And mm-hmm. I know her life is changing. So I have created she's now my creative director. And we now have another assistant. So as a leader, I'm looking ahead. I'm being visionary on, I have this fabulous person working for me and I don't want to lose them, but you know, their life is changing. And so what can I do to move my organization around or create something that I can still keep this person. And I have known of my many years as a leader in several businesses that, you know, we all grow. We want to grow. We want to learn new things, that you can't keep the same person in the same position forever. So always be thinking, where's the next place they can go, so that they are excited about growth also.
So
you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, so true, because so on a whole bunch of levels, some of which you said and some of which you didn't, and that is not all of what you just described is exactly right, and now you've created a new opportunity, not just for Carly, but for your business to grow and for your customers, because you can now offer new and varied and different things. I'm sure we haven't had a specific conversation about it, but those opportunities are not just for that employee. Those opportunities are for the business and ultimately for your customers. And so I think that's tremendously valuable. And too often what people do is, man, I'd like to promote Carly, but I can't promote Carly, because who would be my assistant? But because you've done documentation, and because you've built checklists, and because you've built training, we can move Carly, because the next person can be successful, and that's huge, right? So this is an everybody wins scenario, right? Literally everybody wins. Carly wins, you win, a new person wins, your results win, your customers win. I mean, everybody wins. And so, but if we don't get proactive about that, we don't get in front of that, if we don't get out of our own way about that as a leader to recognize, remember what I said, and I know we're about out of time, what I said at the beginning, leadership is not about us, it's about the goal. And
exactly.
So you have goals related to your team, but also related to the results that you want, and the, you know, and the productivity and the profitability that you want, all those things. And so when you keep that in the forefront, it makes it much easier for you to make decisions about what to do with Carly. And leadership isn't about us, it is about the people that we're leading. And so, you know, continuing to engage them, continuing to help them be successful, continuing to keep it fresh for them, isn't just like a nice to do for them. It's a good business decision, too.
Yes. And the other thing about being a leader for me is always, how much am I in integrity with myself and the people that I'm working with, not just my customers and clients, but, you know, being in integrity with the staff of, you know, I know they're devoting time and energy for me, and I want to equally make sure that working for Lee Miltier Inc. is a pleasurable thing, it's a rewarding thing, that they're excited about coming to work, that they, you know, that they know that there's a future there for them. And I think, as you said earlier, the more that we communicate with them, the more that we're sharing the why, really makes a difference. Well, listen, as always, Kevin, you are a wealth of information. I wish we could talk a little bit more. We have some. We're going to share with you some articles from Kevin that you're going to be able to see. And also, Kevin has a special report that we're going to put on the website that you're going to be able to go and download about 7 reasons new supervision training is essential. So, Kevin, tell us your website so people can just find you directly.
Yeah, real easy. KevinEikenberry.com, KevinEikenberry.com. We have a whole family of websites for a bunch of our various products, but it all sort of starts there. That's the hub. You can get to my blog from there and everything else. And so, Lee, thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure to spend the hour with you, even if it was over the phone.
Well, I hope to see you soon, Kevin, and thank you so much. And we'll be talking soon. And everybody, this is a wrap, and I'll be talking to you again next month. Thank you so much.